This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Thousands of San Francisco's so-called soft-story homes, three-story or higher wood-frame buildings built before 1978, are vulnerable to earthquakes. And today, the city's Board of Supervisors will look at a proposal to mandate earthquake retrofitting of these structures by the year 2020. And this is certainly not only an issue in San Francisco, but really throughout the Bay Area, because there are buildings really throughout the Bay Area that have been seen and continue to be seen as being unsafe. But what about questions involved in and really making it mandatory for building owners to spend, well, up $10,000-$20,000 really is what we're talking about just in general. We want to talk first with Noah Arroyo, who's been covering this story. He's with the San Francisco Public Press. They're a KQED news associate, and you can follow this story at www.sfpublicpress.org/earthquakes. And Noah Arroyo, good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us on Forum. Good morning.
Thanks for having me, Michael. Good morning.
Well, let's talk about what this proposal is, what we know about it at this point. It is going before the Board of Supervisors today, and just how specific is it, and what do we know?
Well, we know that it's been in the works since about 2010, ever since Newsom tried to pass a bond measure that would have helped certain buildings retrofit. He intended for a piece of legislation to follow that would mandate the retrofits across the city. That didn't happen because the bond measure didn't happen. So this is that mandate. The language has been in the works since 2010. Right now we're finally getting a piece of legislation, and it's going before the board today.
And it's a result, we should add, of a 10-year study. And we know, don't we, that about one of 14 San Franciscans live in one of these old buildings?
Yeah, that's what we know so far. That's a result of the tentative 10-year study that the city did. Or, I'm sorry, the study wasn't tentative, but the results are because we don't know a building is really a soft-story building or possesses a soft-story vulnerability on the first floor until we get an engineer in there to look at it in depth, and that costs time and money. So failing that, what the city did was to assemble a group of professionals in the field, and we're talking about architects or engineers, building inspectors, academics in some cases, to review plans for buildings throughout the entire city, as well as do a sidewalk survey in person. And so they walked around the city, and they saw that the first floor looked or did not look like a soft-story building, and they made a check mark. And after that was all said and done, we had this tentative list of almost 3,000 buildings that looked like they might be soft-story buildings. So we have a gauge for how big the problem is, but we don't know exactly until we get the engineers in there to look at the properties one by one.
We've also got estimates of about 58,000 to 60,000 people having impact as a result of this if it goes through. And we're talking about, again, three-plus stories, usually five-person units. These are specific types of buildings. They're stores, garages, and most are rental properties. And most are concentrated in the Western Addition?
There are certain areas where they're concentrated. The Western Addition is one of them. The Mission District is another. The Marina is a big one. But the Marina suffered such damage from the Loma Prieta earthquake in 1989 that likely, although we don't know for sure once again because we haven't checked them all, but likely those property owners have retrofitted to some extent. It's the older buildings in these lower-income neighborhoods such as the Mission District and the Western Addition, or historically lower income, that probably have not been retrofitted. But once again, probably is the best that we've got. And yes, your figures are right. As far as the city's estimates go, we're looking at roughly 58,000 people. 90% of them are renters, as far as we know. And the experts that I've spoken with have said that almost all of them are in rent-controlled buildings just by virtue of when these buildings were constructed. We're talking about pre-January 1st, 1978.
And this has political backing. Mayor's behind it, Supervisor Chu, Supervisor Wiener, yeah?
That's right. It's coming from the mayor's office. It's coming from specifically Patrick Odellini and the new Earthquake Safety Implementation Program. It's a branch of the city administrator's office. It does have Supervisor Chu's backing. It does have Supervisor Wiener's backing. And yeah, the board's going to see it today.
Well, we'll keep track of what's happening. In the meantime, we want to talk with some more folks about this. Noah Arroyo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Again, Noah Arroyo, a journalist with San Francisco Public Press, a KQED News associate. And once again, remind you, you can follow this story at www.sfpublicpress.org/earthquakes. Chris Bolin is with us this morning here in studio, chairman and senior principal with Degenkolb Engineers. They're He is a structural engineer and on the advisory group that actually helped draft the ordinance. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. We also have Charlie Goss with us, who is government affairs officer with the San Francisco Apartment Association on the advisory board that also helped draft the ordinance. Charlie Goss, good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you both. Thank you for being here. Chris Pullen, let me begin with you, and let's begin by talking about how this all evolved. I mean, it came about in part through the Community Action Plan for Seismic Safety right after Loma Prieta.
Yeah, the Loma Prieta earthquake demonstrated to us the vulnerability of our tall apartment buildings that basically have businesses or parking garages underneath. And those buildings, we had five of them in the Marina District that collapsed. One of them started a major fire. There's been a concern in the city ever since then that something needed to be done to secure those buildings so that wouldn't happen. In addition to that, there's been quite a bit of work done the last 5 years, sponsored by Spur and by the mayor's office, looking at what it would mean for the city to be able to recover. And this program really is one piece of that recovery program. We have a major earthquake in San Francisco. Lots of things are going to be damaged, but one of the most important things that we've learned is that something like 60,000 units in our city are not going to be occupiable, and those people are going to have interim housing, and there's no room for them in the city. This group of buildings, these apartment buildings, are the most vulnerable and really represent a large share of those buildings that will be unoccupiable.
There is a kind of first step here, then, with this ordinance, as most people see it, and yet and a necessary step. I mean, seismic safety, but from the standpoint of some of these owners, particularly who don't necessarily have $10,000-$20,000 to cough up, to tell them it's mandatory that you do this retrofitting, it's going to do some hardship.
It is hardship. I think that the cost of the retrofit needs to be looked at in terms of what the building values are and what the protection is provided. As a structural engineer, we feel like we're very fortunate to have this kind of building because it's so easy to fix them. $10,000 or $20,000 is a small price to pay. Usually we see buildings have to spend 10% to 20% of their value to get this kind of strengthening. But we only need to work on the first floor. We just need to stop the buildings from tipping out of plumb or collapsing so that they can be usable.
Well, we should mention there was a voluntary attempt to make people do this, and it didn't quite work. There were, what, about 53 people who responded or something like that?
That's correct. The voluntary ordinance, which made some limited incentives, encouraged people to do this. They didn't do that. Though I think, as Noah has mentioned, if we really fully understood, and we will after this program gets underway, how many people have retrofitted these buildings since 1989, I think we'd be surprised at the number. It'd be many more than 53.
And Chris Pullen here with us, the studio's chairman and senior principal with Degen Kolb Engineers. Charlie Goss is government affairs officer with the San Francisco Apartment Association. And you're all supporting this legislation, Charlie, but it seems to me that there are going to be people who are going to feel not only that it's too much money to spend, even though it may be in their best interest, in the best interest of their, but it's going to affect tenants too. One has to imagine it's rent control tenants and all that are going to be affected.
They potentially could be, yes. As Chris mentioned, the cost of these retrofits is small in comparison to the total value of the building. And, you know, this is really for the preservation of the building itself, for the safety of the occupants, and the safety of the building itself. So, we feel that an earthquake is going to happen. You know, we don't know when, and it's in everybody's best interest to start the retrofits, you know, pretty soon. As Chris also mentioned, the work is confined to the first floor, and we're hoping that minimizes the impact on tenants.
And by the way, we should mention that Charlie Goss, his organization represents about 2,700 owners and management companies and, again, supports the legislation. There's a lot of political will behind this, too, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're all in support of being prepared for an emergency. And this is really in the best interest of San Franciscans.
Well, we also should mention that the kind of problems we're talking about affects, as I kept emphasizing, the whole Bay Area. There's a lot of legislation on the docket and being considered not only in San Francisco but throughout the Bay Area.
Yeah, absolutely. My association operates just in San Francisco, so I'm not as familiar with some of the other cities, but I know there has been some retrofit legislation in Berkeley as well.
And again, the mayor is the chief sponsor of this, and thousands of San Francisco's so-called soft-story homes, and those are three-story or higher wood-frame buildings built before 1978 are vulnerable to earthquakes. And today, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors is actually going to look at a proposal to mandate earthquake retrofitting of those structures by 2020. What are your thoughts about this? Particularly invite homeowners or building owners to weigh in here. But, of course, if you're renting, too, and you have concerns, you may want to talk about what do you think about the idea of mandating seismic retrofitting. We'd like to hear from you, and if you'd like to join us, you can do that now at our toll-free number, which is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. Feel free to call us now, again, at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. And you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments you might have on our website simply by going to kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment. And you can also go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle, again, is @KQED Forum. But feel free to join the program. We spoke earlier with Noah Arroyo, journalist with the San Francisco Public Press. Chris Poland is with us, chairman and senior principal for the Degenkolb Engineers. And Charlie Goss with us by phone is government affairs officer with the San Francisco Apartment Association. Are you hearing sort of overwhelming support from those 2,700 that you represent, Charlie?
You know, I'll be honest, it's mixed. The financial burden is a concern for many, but for most of our membership, many rental property owners, what we've heard is that if they have sufficient time to do the work, you know, then they're more comfortable with it. Patrick Odolini and the city has done a great job of bringing some financing options to the table, and our membership is pretty comfortable with that.
Could you talk a little bit of what those options are at this point?
You know, I'm not as familiar with them as he is, to be honest with you.
This would be some of, I read a little bit about local banks getting involved.
Yeah, he brought, you know, 10 to 12 local banks to the table, and I wasn't a party of those discussions. But my thought is that they were enthusiastic to participate. And you know, the local banks know that these buildings are vulnerable. And that, you know, as a community, we need to sort of work on this together and come together.
But the good news, again, Chris Poland, as you said, is pretty easy problem to fix for the most part.
It is an easy problem to fix, and it's not that costly. And from my perspective, that's why the banks are so supportive of this, because they know the loans they're going to be providing are very, very low compared to the equity and the value of these buildings.
Well, we want to, again, hear from you on this, and we'll go to our calls here in just a moment. But at this stage, it seems likely, Charlie, that this is going to pass. I mean, as I said, we're talking about the political support for it. Your organization supports it. I don't see too many impediments in the way, do you?
No, not from everything I've heard so far.
You want to add to that, Chris Bowen?
Yeah, I'd just like to underscore the importance of this to the city. When you think about the ability of San Francisco to survive a large earthquake that we expect in the next 50 years, if we do lose 60,000 of our units and we don't have a place for those people to live, then they're going to have to move out of the San Francisco area because we're a peninsula. There's no easy place for them to move. And once they leave, then it's a question of whether the city can really recover quickly or not. And we just need to think about New Orleans and Katrina, when the workforce had to leave because there was no place to live, the businesses moved out. And once that happens, then it becomes a bigger struggle for the economy to restore itself. We need our workforce in place within a couple of months in order for the city to be able to recover economically. And so that's why it's so important to look and figure out how do we get 95% of our city to be able to shelter in place. This program touches 67% of those buildings that are uninhabitable and does it at a very, very low cost. It's a great investment for the community, and I think that's why people recognize it's something we need to do to make sure that San Francisco can rebound very quickly after that next major earthquake.
Of course, I confess to a dark thought here. I mean, we're talking about by 2020, we may have a major earthquake before 2020.
We may have a major earthquake before 2020, and the city is in the process. So this is just one part of a major program. The city is in the process of sorting out how to deal with that if it does happen before.
Let's find out what our listeners have to say. We go, Terrence, to you first. Good morning.
I sell apartment buildings here in San Francisco, and I've been getting a lot of calls over the last year from clients who have these type of corner buildings over garage or retail, and really there's been waiting for the shoe to drop. They know that they're going to have to spend more money to make the building safer. The big question is, you know, when is the city going to make it happen? And, you know, what's the next step after this? Is it going to be, this is the first retrofit, and then you have another layer of retrofit. There's a kind of an overwhelming sense in the city from landlords' perspectives that the city can be a bit overreaching. I think no one wants to have an unsafe building, but there is concern about how the program gets implemented as a mandatory program.
Chris Pullen?
It's a really straightforward process, and it really only has one series of steps to get to conclusion. Within the first year, owners are going to be notified, and they have to provide some basic information about whether they are really one of these buildings that needs to be taken care of. And that's going to be a straightforward process that's going to take very little, if any, professional input from engineers. The second step, once that information is gathered, is you're put into four tiers, and depending on what tier you're in, you may have anywhere from 2 to 5 years to submit your permit application. And again, this is for a small amount of work, so it's not a difficult thing to do. And then you have between 4 and 7 years to complete the work, depending on which tiers you're in. And the tiers are set up to tackle the high occupancy buildings first, and then to deal with the large buildings and leave the liquefaction building. The buildings are in liquefaction zones to last, where we know it's going to be the most complicated to take care of.
I need something to add here, though, and let me thank Terrence for his call. Noah Arroyo, who we had on before from the San Francisco Public Press, just emailed us and said the average cost is more likely $60,000 to $80,000, not $20,000. Most expensive project so far through the city's voluntary program was $5 million, and those figures are looking higher all the time.
Well, you got to understand the figures. The CAPS study that proposed this mandatory ordinance developed the strengthening schemes and said it was $10,000 to $15,000 per unit. So if you have a 5-unit building, you're in the $50,000 to $80,000 range. If you're an 80-unit building, we have 80-unit buildings in town. Yeah. It's going to be much more.
Here's some strong sentiment from a listener named Ricky. He says, I think that San Francisco property owners should bring a court action against the San Francisco Board of Supervisors for abuse of power. It is astonishing, the callous behavior of San Francisco leaders. Who will defend the people who have struggled to work hard, save, pay taxes, and buy and take care of property? These so-called leaders should all be fired. Americans have become sheep. Very sad state of affairs. Certainly Jefferson, Washington, even Eisenhower would have been shocked by this power grab. If that were someone from the association, Charlie Goss, what would you say?
I would say that many of these buildings are vulnerable, that an earthquake will happen, that, a voluntary program was put into place and it wasn't necessarily participated in as much as it could have been. From all of our feedback, the city has been great to work with, and they've put a lot of work and research into this. Lawrence Cornfield and the CAPS project went on and worked on this for more than 10 years before it's really led to this implementation. But from all of our feedback, if owners have sufficient time to do this work, to finance this work, and more and more contractors come into the industry and get better at this work, and the actual cost of construction comes down, then, this is something that's achievable.
Well, it's going to put a number of people to work, that's for sure. Help with unemployment. Let me get another caller on here, though, and we go to you, Becky. Hi.
Hi. So does this apply to regular homeowners, not apartment owners, who have three-story older building that's not a corner over a garage?
This applies to three-story or more buildings, and it'd actually be two stories of apartments over garages. That's considered three stories or more, and 5 units or more. So if you're referring to a one- or two-family unit that's 3 stories tall, it's exempt from this particular ordinance. Not that those buildings don't need to be dealt with, but it's not part of this ordinance.
Okay, thanks. That was my question.
Thank you. Glad you got your question answered. And let's get Brian on here next. Brian, join us.
Hello?
Yes, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I live in San Francisco, and I rent. And I believe I'm in one of those buildings that you're talking about, more than 3 stories, many units inside. And I have rent control, and I'm concerned that maybe they might make an exemption to raise the rent more than they normally do, the 1% to 3% a year, to offset the costs of the landlord's retrofitting.
Charlie Goss?
I'd say that's definitely a possibility. When construction work or updates are mandated by the city, the owner has the ability to pass through those costs. The costs are amortized over 20 years, so we're not talking about a huge monthly increase. But I'd say, yes, that's a realistic possibility.
All right, and I thank Brian for the call, and let's get another caller on, and that's you, Jerry. You're on forum.
Yes, I live in one of those types of buildings, and this is really interesting because they just did this sort of retrofit to our building. Of course, I'm glad they did, but it was kind of a big deal, and they said that the city was mandating it. And so that's the fact that they're saying the city did, and I thought that ordinance had passed. I find that very interesting.
I think they were giving you some hooey, or maybe anticipating that mandatory ordinance. At this point, like we've said, it's up for debate today, and it's likely to go through, but has not been passed. It was voluntary.
That's interesting. These people, because this outfit would never spend money they didn't have to on these buildings. And the big deal was all these people had to move out of their garages. And we kind of stepped back and said, well, who's paying for that? To move out, put everything in storage, and then move back in.
Yeah, now there's an interesting question, Charlie.
You know, that is an interesting question. And I'm not sure. I know the city's trying to work out some options with, you know, where people can park and where these parking spots will be moved to, because a lot of the soft story condition is basically an area where people can park under the building. And I'm not sure, you know, that's been totally worked out yet.
Well, the devil is in these details, obviously. Let me get another caller on. And Tracy, that's you. Good morning.
Good morning. It seems like a possible way to pay for it would be property tax credits. I mean, it's an obvious thing. It's something that benefits the city. It benefits the property owner. And might be straightforward to do. That's the suggestion, and I'm done. Thanks.
Well, we thank you for that suggestion. A lot of people listening, including some of the people on the Board of Supervisors, I suspect. So we'll move forward on that. And I want to remind you that you're listening to Forum, and we're talking with Chris Poland and Charlie Goss. Chris Poland's chair and senior principal for Degen Cole Engineers. Charlie Goss is government affairs officer for the San Francisco Apartment Association. At 10:15, by the way, President Obama will be making a statement about the nation's finances just a day after he signed a debt ceiling bill suspending the nation's borrowing limit until May 18. And Forum will be preempted at 10 a.m. so NPR can bring you anchored coverage of the president's speech. This is a fundraising period for this radio station. For more information about how to support KQED, simply go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another caller. And Marcia, that's you. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, I appraise in the Bay Area, and I specialize in apartment buildings. So I've had some experience with retrofitting requirements from several different cities. But working for major lenders, I've found that most of them will not lend on a property that is a soft story that has not been retrofitted, or they will require it to be retrofitted. So it's got some precedent. And also we had precedent when, after the earthquake, with the unreinforced masonry buildings that had to be retrofitted. So yeah. it's not a new topic for apartment owners.
Yeah, good points. And thank you for those, Marcia. Good to hear from you. Appreciate hearing from you. And let's hear from another caller, and that's Eric, who's calling us from San Francisco. Eric, hi.
Yes, good morning, Michael. You know, I guess it's a big elephant in the room here. You know, I've been a landlord in San Francisco for over 30 years now. And, you know, landlords are always, you know, I feel kind of unfairly treated in this city, of course, because I'm a landlord here. Maybe it's subjective. But there's always, you know, rules and regulations being bombarded on the landlords as time goes on, more restrictions, more rent control, less raises. And, you know, I'm looking at the fairness situation of tenants are living in a building, you know, paying, you know, one-third of what the market rent is. Again, I mean, is it really fair for the landlords to be carrying all the responsibility to protect the tenants, really, because they're getting a lot of benefit in the whole situation without them having to at least get, you know, maybe move up to market rent in those buildings where they're being retrofitted? It's just fairness to me. You know, it's maybe subjective. Maybe it's not fair from my part to say that, but there are a lot of tenants that are paying $500 when they should be paying maybe $1,500 now. I mean, something has to give here.
Well, Charlie, I was going to go back to Charlie Goss on this, and Eric, thank you for the call, but let me add a comment from a listener, Sarah, who emails and says, we need to explore more the cost of the retrofit work for tenants. Landlords will be able to pass through some of the costs in the form of rent increases, even under our rent control laws. In some cases, this could mean as much as $100 a month. There is no question this work needs to happen as soon as possible, but who should pay? In most cases, when it is a matter of bringing a building up to code, it is the property owner's responsibility. This makes sense, since owners are preserving their property and certainly will gain an increase in their property values, whereas in this high rental market, most renters cannot even afford a slight increase in their rent. Charlie, go ahead.
Yeah, so a couple of things. Under current San Francisco rent law, when construction or updating work is mandated by the city, it's 100% pass-throughable. The costs can be passed through to the tenants. As I mentioned earlier, that's done over 20 years, and the increase isn't as much as $100. It's quite significantly less in most cases. One of the callers also mentioned the unreinforced masonry program, which, you know, was another mandatory upgrading program. And, you know, owners could pass through the cost of those updates as well. It was something that was negotiated and agreed upon in the city. And, you know, we didn't see increases of up to $100 then either. So I do understand the concern. But again, this is for the benefit of rent-controlled housing. It's for the preservation of rent-controlled housing. If this work isn't mandated and the work doesn't get done, and these buildings collapse, they will be rebuilt as new construction, which isn't under rent control. And so, you know, this is a small cost that tenants and owners are both going to be, you know, essentially paying for if it is passed through. But it's for the preservation of rent-controlled housing.
Let me bring Beth on. Beth, thanks for waiting. You're on Forum. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I live in a two-unit building, old construction in the Mission above a garage. And we've looked at having our foundation reinforced and retrofitted. And one of the problems is we get such a wide variety of information around what the costs would be and what the right things to do are that we've had a hard time finding good information. I was wondering if you had recommendations around where consumers can go.
Chris Poland.
Yeah, the Earthquake Safety Implementation Program that is now underway under Patrick Ottolini's leadership, one of the tasks they have is to develop standard designs and standard plans that will be available for homeowners of those smaller buildings like you're describing to be able to use without any additional design and have their contractors implement. So that information's on the way.
Well, on that note, we will follow this story again today. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors looking at a proposal to mandate earthquake retrofitting of the structures that are so-called soft-story homes. Those are three-story or higher wood frame buildings built before 1978, and the structures would have to be retrofitted by 2020. I want to thank Noah Arroyo with us earlier, journalist for the San Francisco Public Press. Thanks to you, Chris Poland, for spending this half hour with us, chairman and senior principal of Degenbolt Engineers, structural engineer, and on the advisory group that helped draft the ordinance. And thanks to Charlie Goss, who was also with us by phone this morning, government affairs officer for the San Francisco Apartment Association, and also on the advisory board that helped draft the ordinance. And we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. Forums produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi, with production assistance from Tina Larberg. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer Amanda Stupai. Senior editor Dan Zoll. Executive producer Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.